Hello and a very warm welcome to the Couch Experts Cricket Podcast Show, Silly Point. I'm Gautam, and coming up on today's show, England thrash India to go 3-0 up and go to the top of the test rankings. We also discuss if this is the best English side over the last 20 years, how long can England remain at the top, and we also debate the immediate test future of India. Joining me on today's show, as usual, is Chandra Jayaramakrishnan, who is the head of Couch Expert. Welcome, Chandra.
Thanks, Gautam.
Also joining us, as usual, Rajat Jain, who is the head of tennis here at Couch Expert. Welcome, Rajat.
Thank you.
Today, we also have a guest with us today, Arvind Srivatsa. Srivatsa is a popular columnist and analyst for the very popular cricket portal, CricBuzz, and as often his columns are very insightful. Thanks a lot for joining us, Srivatsa.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Gautam. Thank you.
Let's get started then. It is 2 days since England won the test in Edgbaston to go 3-0 up and are now crowned old number one. It was only in the last week's show, Chandra, that we were discussing about how Sehwag's return would be a big factor and how Zahir's injury might actually prove to be a blessing in disguise for one of the younger bowlers to step up and be noticed. But we have only seen that the chasm between the sides has widened. A massive innings and plenty dubbing for India. What went wrong for India, Chandra?
Everything. I think absolutely everything that we discussed had gone wrong. I mean, it almost appeared as though these two teams were batting on different surfaces, did it not? And the outcome is that the morale of the Indian team has taken such a hard beating that the situation appeared innocuously win-win either way. I mean, had we won the game, we were back 2-1 in the series. And if we'd lost the way we did, we'd probably get an extra day of rest. And then that's how the situation's been viewed by the common public. And look, Gautam, I think we did a post-mortem of the series after the Trent Bridge test. And the reasons have not changed yet. It's still poor preparation. We thought that Virender Sehwag would be the magician to turn our fortunes around. But Sehwag played the way he does, and I do remember mentioning that we accept a Sehwag duck with equal exuberance as a big 100 from him, irrespective of the experience that he possesses right now. And I didn't frown when I saw him get out for ducks in both innings, although I bet Abhinav Mukund did because he'd just come off 100 from Northampton, and he was sitting among the reserves. But all said and done, it's the same old problems and the same disappointing results. We saw how the body language of the Indian players, kind of seemed to decay exponentially with every boundary that was leaked. And funnily, with every catch, that was dropped as well. I mean, an expert or a veteran like Rahul Dravid dropped two sitters at slips. And then Dhoni had to come out and acknowledge that, the Indians are not a great fielding unit. And I think after the first two games, we spoke a lot about the batting and the bowling departments in the series. And Birmingham has just added another facet to this discussion, which is fielding. So the circle of cricket is complete, and we have successfully displayed our incompetence in all three departments so far. I mean, I feel very bad as an Indian fan to say this, but sometimes, when you're in the middle of solving problems, you're definitely going to have moments to make improvements even before the overall problem is solved. And I think fielding is one aspect that fits right in here. You've got to seize those opportunities because they boost your morale. It gives, the bowler an added bundle of energy. And for anyone who's watching you play, you're sending the message that you're on the ball and you mean business. And none of that seems to have happened so far this series. We've only got from bad to worse, and it's simple as that. I don't see the situation throwing any sort of light in.
Getting bad to worse. Rajat, I understand that we've dissected it from an Indian standpoint, and it's almost like, the ghost from the past has resurfaced where, our batsmen have been highly incapable of batting on real tough conditions. But we also have to look at it from England's perspective, right? I mean, England have shown great depth in the series. It is not that they have not had injury or form issues. Templet and Trott have been unavailable, but their reserves have been great with someone like Breslin coming in and having a tremendous impact straight away with both bat and ball. Their openers have come good in this series, in this test rather. And there's simply no weak links here, are there?
Yes, it's hard when your reserves are doing so well. That is Breslin, and Breslin came in as a replacement of Tremlett, and England will have a very huge headache if once Tremlett is fit, as to whom to choose over whether Tremlett or Breslin, and that is the sign of a dominant team when even your mainstream players will be fighting for a place against the reserves, and that is the sign that England are slowly becoming a dominant team. Will they become like Australia of the early 2000s or West Indies or the West Indies of the 70s? We don't know, but it looks like they are on the right path.
Yeah, I mean that's where I'm going to come to you now, Srivatsa. You cover games day in and day out, and we are seeing that England are becoming really dominant over the last 2 years. They've not lost any series, and even in Australia when they were there, which you would have covered for Cricbuzz, they won three games, I think, by three innings rather, right? So, are they as good as India have made them out to be in the series?
It's a combination of factors. Like India have played badly, but you have to accept the fact that England are a far superior side in their home conditions. Like when you saw them going to Australia during the Ashes, they had 1 month to prepare, whereas India just came out of a series in West Indies where half the side didn't play, and you had people like Zahir Khan and Sachin Tendulkar opting out of the West Indies series so that they can focus on the England series. Actually, there are only two priorities for India this year. One was the World Cup, and one was the series in England. We prioritized the World Cup well, and we won it. But there has been sadly a lack of planning and foresight when it came to this series. I covered the Ashes series that England won in Australia, and they were utterly dominant. Many people expected James Anderson to not perform well with the Kookaburra ball because he had a horrible 2007 Ashes in Australia when they were drubbed final. But the way he bowled with the Kookaburra ball, showing exceptional control over swing and seam, and displaying that he's surely one of the best new ball bowlers around. I would say that he's almost on par with Dale Steyn, but just behind Dale Steyn, because Steyn strike rate is the best among all bowlers when you take into account Test cricket. But the way they planned for the Ashes series in Australia, and the way they have planned here, just shows how professional a side England are. The one major thing that England have over India is their ability to find fast bowlers. Like they have an assembly line of fast bowlers. If you have a Tremlett missing out, there is a Breslin coming in. If you have a Breslin missing out, they have a Stephen Finn. Apart from all this, they have still capable and competent bowlers in Ajmal Shahzad, Graham Onions, and Jade Dunbar waiting in the wings. So they have at least 8-9 test bowlers who can fill in the slots if needed. Whereas India rely excessively on Zahir Khan. Actually, the test series was lost on the first day of the first session when Zahir Khan pulled his hamstring. From then on, it was just catch-up cricket. I would say that England are an utterly dominant side, but India have contributed to their own demise by batting poorly. Once the batting failed, we had no chance in the series with the bowling lineup without Zahir. So I would say that England deserve to be number one, and we have a lot of soul searching to do.
Yeah, I think that actually brings us to this point. I mean, we've discussed at length in terms of the depth of reserves that England has, and we are talking about James Anderson here being probably the best fast bowler just behind Dale Steyn. I would think Dale Steyn will still be the best because for the simple reason that he's dominated, he's been able to dominate across all conditions, across with all kinds of balls. They're not just the Dukes or the Kookaburra or even the SG ball. He's one fast bowler who comes outside of the subcontinent who's really had done well here. Which let's get back to the point, our next point in discussion here, that a lot of people are talking about that this England side is the best England side that they've seen over a little while. So it's been a remarkable 2 years for England. They have won something like 19 of the 29 games under Andy Flower, and they've shown to be really ruthless, unlike some of the previous English sides. They bat a long way down, their batsmen make big hundreds, and their bowling depth is just marvelous, like Srivatsa was just mentioning. And somebody like Hussain called it the best England side that he had ever seen. Shane Warne on Sunday covered, just spoke about this England team and compared it with the Australian team in his column for the Telegraph and said that there was not much to choose between these two sides. Chandra, let me start with you. Is this England team that good that all these people are making it out to be?
I think it's definitely the best England side I have seen ever since I started following cricket. I mean, I've been closely following cricket for like say the last 15 years, ever since I was probably 8 years old. And they've definitely had a few outstanding stars in the past, you know, men who could have walked into other dressing rooms and still made it to their 11s with ease. You know, guys like Flintoff, Trescothick, and to an extent even Michael Vaughan, you know, when he was in his best of form. But today, the unit looks totally different. I mean, Stross is a very experienced campaigner. Cook has around, what, 1900s before his 27th birthday. Kevin Peterson is, well, he's Kevin Peterson, you know, you can't say anything more than that. Ian Bell looks the best English player to have had, you know, ever wielded a willow by a mile. Graham Swann's a top spinner. Stuart Broad has come of age with both the ball and bat. And Jimmy Anderson has definitely matured into, you know, someone like England's version of a Zaheer Khan. And what is important to remember is that, you know, these guys did not become stars overnight. They had to take the long, bumpy road to success. If you recollect, you know, Stross required a career-saving 100 in New Zealand to reverse its fortunes. Cook would not even have gone for the trip down under had it not been for that career-saving 100 against the Pakistanis at the Oval. Ian Bell was dropped after that debacle of a series in the Caribbean. Graham Swann actually came out and said that he almost quit cricket at one point of time during his county career. And as Srivatsa said, Anderson during the 2007 Ashes down under had such a bad time with the Kookaburra ball that, you know, even the current Indian attack would have appeared to, you know, be Michael Holding-esque, if I could put it that way. So all these guys have been, you know, hit hard. They've witnessed what rock bottom means, and they have earned their rights to be called world champions in Test cricket today. And as I said in one of my recent articles as well, England's rise to the top has been a lot more convincing than that of the Indians because they looked world beaters in all departments. Even their fielding, I think Srivatsa would have observed when he was covering the Ashes series, their performance down under, you know, on the field looks significantly better than that of the Aussies. So all this is just a reflection of all the hard work and experiences that the Englishmen have gained ever since, you know, I would say not even ever since, but probably during the best part of the last decade. You know, all this fortune started ever since the 2005 Ashes. They believed that they could actually go on to be the number one side. So this is definitely the best England side that I've seen, no doubt about it.
It's interesting that you know cover it from the last viewer's perspective in terms of how this has been their best side over the last 20 years. Rajat, let me come to you. England, you know, especially for those of us who have seen England in the 90s and 2000s, they've not been a great Test side. I mean, hardly many of them would even feature in the top three Test sides over the last 20 years. But you've got to give it to them that, you know, under Fletcher, they started with having a really solid time of it. They started building it from under Hussain and Fletcher in 1999. And around 2003, when you know they got into the West Indies and they had this real outstanding set of fast bowlers coming through, Harmison, Flintoff, Haggard, even Simon Jones. And they went ahead and won in South Africa. Not any other team outside of Australia has won a series there. And they had a remarkable series victory with that team that went on to win in 2005 the Ashes. And people thought that'll actually take them to the top, and they will be the team that'll eventually dismantle Australia from the top. It didn't happen that way. Do you also believe that, no, this is the best England team that you've seen?
Yes, I mean, I don't think it. For me, it's not a hard call to choose between today's England team and any other team that was fielded during the 90s or the early 2000s. That this is the best team in the last 20 years. We can just compare it to some of the world's most dominant teams that we have seen. Starting by the captain, we have Andrew Strauss, who is innovative in the field as well as is willing to take risky and smart decisions. For example, during the first test, he declared in the second innings even before they had taken a lead of 500. So this is not something that we see during in test cricket that often. And it was, I think, a very good aggressive decision for Strauss, which wanted to where he wanted to outcome for a result. And so we have a very good captain. We have a very good wicket keeper batsman in Matt Prior, who doesn't miss much and who is very good with the bat. We have two very good all-rounders in Bresnan and Stuart Broad. They have a good world-class fast bowler in James Anderson. And in terms of batsmen, they have all type of batsmen. Like Kevin Peterson is an explosive batsman who can take the game away from you. Ian Bell has a very good technique and application on the crease where he can stay for long periods of time, and so does Alastair Cook. So you can see that for being a world beater, you have to have all types of combination in the 11, and there is not a weak link in this English team. That is, they have an all-rounder, they have a wicket-keeper batsman, they have a very good fast bowler, and in Swan they have the world's best spinner right now. So yes, it's not a difficult call as to that this is probably the best England team in the last 20 years.
Let me get to you here, Siwatsa. I think we are going to get into the discussion of how long actually this England team can remain at the top. Before that, as fans of cricket, I know, remember that we used to have discussion back in our school days when we used to compare the teams that played, say, in the 92 World Cup. I mean, I know I'm talking about the one-day team here, but and post that, you had all kinds of people playing for England. The likes of Alan Mullally, I remember he was part of the team that actually played the 1996 series against India, the last time they won against India before this one. And you had people like Alan Mullally, Darren Goff, Peter Martin, Ed Giddens, Chris Lewis. You had even all kinds of Min Patel, all kinds of bowlers who would come in. You just knew, I mean, it was a procession of people coming in and going. It would just cover two seasons of English cricket and see that 30 people have turned up playing for England. And now to see the consistent runs that these people have been given. I mean, we've not actually even spoken about the kind of impact somebody like Cook is having. You had a similar dogged people batting at the top for England even back in the days in the form of Michael Atherton and others. How do you compare teams, say the team from now, say the team in the mid-90s, and how do you think that this team is superior from the rest of the teams that England has managed to put on park over the last 20 years?
Actually, I have seen a lot of English teams. Let me start with the 90s. Like as you said, there are a lot of players who played for England. Like if you see the 1997 Ashes, they had a left-arm seamer called Mike Smith playing at Headingley, which was his home ground. And he played just one test and then he was dropped. You had lots of players representing England, like as you said, Chris Lewis, Alan Mullally, Dominic Cork, who were no doubt talented, but they didn't have big or extended careers. You had the likes of, when it came to the spin bowling department, you had the likes of Ian Salisbury and Min Patel, who had horrible averages. This was all in the 90s when England were just a really bad team. In fact, they were ranked at the lowest test team in 1999 when they lost the test series to New Zealand at home. That's when the real transformation came about, like when Duncan Fletcher and Nasir Hussain got together and the era of central contacts came into play, and slowly England got back their form and their mojo. Like when they toured, they beat Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka and they beat Pakistan in Pakistan in 2001, and that was slowly the beginning of their resurgence, and it gradually became better when Michael Vaughan took over after Nasir Hussain opted to give up captaincy and retired soon after. Actually, there are only two English sides that we can compare at the moment: the present one and the one that won the Ashes in 2005. Apart from that, all the English sides were, if you can say, plain mediocre. The one in 2005 had an awesome all-rounder in Flintoff. The present one does not have such a good all-rounder, but the other major reason why they are making up for the loss of Flintoff is they have two all-rounders right now in Broad and Bresnan who are filling in that role. In 2005, they had a Marcus Trescothick, who is still very good playing for Somerset, who makes plenty of runs. He makes double hundreds, triple hundreds in county cricket, but for his own, as we all know, for his own stress-related problems, he has opted not to play for England. The 2005 team under Fletcher and Vaughan, they prepared assiduously, and they had Troy Cooley as the bowling coach now, who was the bowling coach for Australia until Craig McDermott replaced him recently. The 2005 side, I would say, was good, but this present side has a more balanced attack and is not prone to injuries. Like if you see Simon Jones just start in one Ashes series in 2005. That's it. After that, he was dropped. In fact, he was missing from the final test of that series against Australia because he had an injury, and Paul Collingwood came into his place, if I remember correctly. So if now under Fletcher and Andrew Strauss, there has been clear planning and clear strategizing. This all came into fruition when they lost to West Indies at Sabina Park, Jamaica, when Jerome Taylor bowled them out for 50. From that point of time, they decided that this is not going to happen, and they prepared accordingly. If you see England right now, there is no perceptible weak links in the batting order. Maybe you can say Morgan is still not a proper test player, and his true test will come on turning tracks when they tour Sri Lanka and India next year. But apart from that, there is no weak links, and they have a world class fast bowler in James Anderson, who has been supported well by Broad and Tremlett and Brisbane, and they have a lot of other fast bowlers also coming up, and undoubtedly Graham Swan is the best spinner in the world, and I would say that this is the best England side for the last 20 years. This is the best England test side that I've seen, and they're only going to get stronger from here.
And this team under Andrew Flower and Andrew Starr is going places, which actually brings us to the next point in discussion. I mean, how good are England as a side for them to remain at the top? Chandra, I'll come to you here. We've actually seen press all over the world going gaga about this England side being, you know, actually being good enough to stay at the top and dominate world cricket for the next couple of years. And you already have, trust an Australian to spoil the party. Malcolm Conn, who writes for The Age, has come out and said that, you know, England cannot call themselves the best until they've beaten England repeatedly over and again. And maybe they come to Australia or blank Australia, like how they've blanked India in England or in Australia. And some are already starting to question their ability to win in the subcontinent. Now, if I can start with you, you cannot actually strength the you cannot question the strength and depth of this England team. But let's be honest here. Like India and South Africa, they have not won everywhere. But you would think that depth and bowling, and that they are a relatively young side who are yet to peak. As Srivatsa was mentioning, that they can only get better. You really think that they can stay there for quite a while?
I think so. I mean, like you rightly said, they're relatively younger than their other counterparts, like, you know, the Australians and the Indians, and even to a certain extent, the South Africans. But I think they've got it in them to be up there on top for a while. And I believe that the relatively average outlooks of, you know, all the other teams from the rest of the world might really help them in this cause. And also the appointment of, Alistair Cook as ODI skipper, and I might be wrong here, kind of gave me the impression that, you know, they might have deprioritized ODIs as compared to their desire to be test number one. And now that they're number one, let's really see how things go. I mean, they've got, you know, a tour to the subcontinent this winter, and that could really be the litmus test. And they haven't, and they're definitely not going to be a good one-day unit at any point of time. But at the test level, they might kind of cling on to that spot for a little while, I feel so. And in the subcontinent, you know, you're going to have a lot of spinners who are going to come against them. Ian Bell is probably their best player of spin, so he's going to be their key man to take them forward. Graham Swan will be tested, although, like Srivatsa said, he's currently a better spinner than, definitely a much better spinner than, you know, what we've seen of Harbhajan of late. But you know that the subcontinent batsmen play spin very well, so it's going to be a good test for Swan. And even the other batsmen from the current England setup are yet to prove their success against spin bowling, you know, guys like Trott especially. But like I said earlier, but the fact that, you know, the other good teams are kind of going through a transition might give them a little edge to actually stay on top for a while. And I've also mentioned this in some of my pieces earlier. Their biggest plus has been the fact that the replacements who have come in have performed so admirably well that you kind of begin to wonder how they were not in the frame of things prior to that. But one thing that I would really like to see from England, apart from their, desire to stay on top, play their best 11, is that I would really like to see them promote more local young British talent. They might really want to get rid of that import tag that they carry with them right now. It's pretty ugly. But even if they claim that it doesn't bother them, I'd really like to see an attempt being made by the Englishmen to bring young British talent to play at international level and, prove that their setup is actually as good as probably the Australians' setup has actually been in the past. So that's one thing I look forward to. But I think they're going to be up there for a while.
It's interesting that you bring up this point wherein I know that you've been vocal about them giving a go for somebody like Taylor kind of a guy, right? To see now that they're 3-0 up, what is the harm in them giving somebody else a go? But I doubt if this setup under Flower and Strauss would do that. But Rajat, I mean, it's one of the things that determines how good a team is. That is the bench strength and the depth of the people that are available. I know that you cover a lot of tennis as well, and it's something that goes beyond the head of most people. That how do you ensure that there is depth? Like you had all these Americans at the top for all over the 80s and 90s, and you just thought people would come through. They had the best infrastructure going around, but you look at American tennis scenario now. Now you don't really have that kind of a bench strength there. I mean, coming back to this point, I was just trying to say here, the depth of the people available and the quality of the people available often determines how long you can stay at the top, because the replacements are as good as the people that are there on the current team. It holds true for the West Indies team of the 80s and 70s and 80s, and the English team of the late 90s and early 2000s. So here the question is, will they be able to sustain at the top as long as they are able to find the replacements? And how do you think that they'll be able to ensure that they have a proper replacement in place?
Yes, interesting. You mentioned the example of American tennis in the 80s and 90s, and now in the 2000s, that there were no adequate replacements once the greats of 90s bowed out. So I would like to point out that we have an example right there in our country. We had the legends of Ganguly, Tendulkar, Dravid, and Lakshman, and even Kumble. And once Kumble bowed down, retired out of Test cricket, our whole spinal cord of spin bowling was lost. I mean, Harbhajan has taken 400 wickets, but he's nowhere as legendary as Anil Kumble was. So, and once Tendulkar and Dravid and Lakshman retires, then I am finding it hard actually to find the replacement of these guys. So even in India, we have the examples right here. In terms of English cricket, one thing that is ignored right now is the age of their players. So the age is on their side. So I can't think of any player who is approaching 35. I mean, Anderson is 29, Broad and Brisbane are in their 20s, and there is hardly any player who is in the late 30s or even in the mid 30s. So age is one factor which will help them to stay at the top for some time to come. Definitely the replacements are the key. So as Srivatsa has already pointed out, the great bench strength of England, and it's hard to find how and yes, the other thing that again in their favor is the current teams, the other teams are not that good, frankly. So apart from South Africa, I can't see any team matching them. Maybe South Africa and maybe Sri Lanka at home. So yeah, given the current weaknesses of other sides and their bench strength and the age of their current players, it's difficult to see them not dominating for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, Srivatsa, let me get to you on this. I know both Rajat and Chandra here are of the opinion that England is yet to reach the peak, and they are bound to get better. But let's also look at the challenges that are being posed to them immediately post this Indian series. Now they are on a road to the UAE as well as to Sri Lanka, and it's I mean, especially say playing a test match series in the UAE, we saw how South Africa struggled. they struggle to put up to get any results out of it. Sri Lanka is not going to be any easy. We actually know how Mahela Jayawardena bats at the SSC and Samaravira, and it's not an easy task for this set of English bowlers going to be. But if you look at the teams that have done well in these conditions, they've had really good fast bowlers that England has. England will also be hosting, I think, South Africa in the early next summer. So it's going to be a straight, it's not going to be as easy a task as many are making it out to be for them to be number one. Your thoughts?
The real threat would come for England would come from South Africa, I would say, because even though they travel to Pakistan in the UAE, I'm sure that they, with their bowling attack, they might be able to just edge the series, or if not, it may be a drawn series, as South Africa found out when they toured last year. And coming back to England traveling to Sri Lanka without Muralidharan and Malinga are just an average attack, as we saw in England when they failed to pick up 20 wickets, or never looked like even picking up 20 wickets. So even though they might play with three spinners in Herath, Randeep, and Mendes, England do have the bowling attack to bowl them out, and especially if the conditions suit swing bowling as they tend to do at Gale. So maybe they might just edge the series 1-0 against Sri Lanka, but their real threat would come against South Africa when South Africa tour them next August. South Africa versus England in England with the Duke Ball and with Dale Steyn and Morne Mokkel, it's going to be one hell of a series. The reason I say that is because South Africa have just unearthed a quality leg spinner in Imran Tahir, and they just need to find a good third seamer to support Steyn and Morkel. They have a wealth of experience in English conditions, with especially with Smith and Callis scoring plenty of runs. And they have the batting to help them with their bowling. Unlike India, they won't be found out because they will go early and prepare for that series. So I would say that's their main threat will come from South Africa. But I see England holding on to their number one ranking just because of their depth and their desire. The number one ranking happened to them not by accident, as it did for India, but by sheer planning and sheer execution under Strauss and Flair. So it's been a consistent progress for them, and their main aim was to become world number one in tests when that Peter Moose saga happened. So from that time, they have planned assiduously, and they have built their team brick by brick, and it has the results have shown. But it's not the same for India. Like, India won a lot of test matches, I agree, but the number one ranking came to them by accident, and now we are not number one anymore. So I would see with this current England side, as you, Rajat and Chandra have pointed out, with the age on the side, I see this England side being number one, with South Africa giving them stiff competition.
Okay, now that we've actually seen England's future for the next few years, and also how we see that South Africa is going to be the team that'll push them for this top spot, I'll probably try to see if we can have a South African voice that'll debate, South Africa's claim to the top position. We'll see if that happens. Now let's come back and look at India. I mean, for all that we have discussed, the shortcomings of India, you got to really look at the stats and then say that they've not really had a bad series for over 3 years. This is the first series that they're losing. With that as the case, and also the way in which probably the team has lost here, we'll see if this actually means the end of the reign for India at the top, or if they have a chance to remain the top three. Chandra, if you can start with you. How do you see the immediate next few months panning out for India?
In simple words, I think they got a plan for the future. Plan for an era without Dravid, Lakshman, Tendulkar, and even to an extent, Zaheer Khan, at least hypothetically. And, this is what, the commercial or the business world would term as an inflection point in Indian cricket. Because as often you've seen in the past, cricketing success often contains the seed of its own destruction. And Gautam, I know you're going to hate me for saying this, but I do believe that the IPL has played a role here. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritties of that. But for one, the calendar is definitely more packed. And for a youngster who's just entering the cricketing arena, this two-edged sword, with money and T20 format-specific technique from a very cricketing perspective is creating a lot of worries for us. you simply cannot expect a youngster to cope and adapt to the demands of all three formats of the game the way, you know, guys like Tendulkar or Callis have done. But look at the way Indian cricket is moving. Let me just quote an example. This Gavaskar scholarship that used to send young Indians to the Australian Academy of Excellence for a wonderful learning experience has been removed because of what I hear, lack of funds. And coming from the BCCI, nothing can be more ironic. This is nothing but a case of misallocation of valuable funds. And when you have politicians like, say, Vilas Rao Deshmukh, who's heading MCA over, you know, someone like Dilip Vensarkar, who was a former Indian cricketer, an excellent batsman in his own right. Or you have, you know, the case of businessmen running cricket, it is their personal interests that come first. None of the franchisee owners from the IPL will bother about whether better young cricketers are churned through their setup. They just want to win. It is a business, it's not sport. It is a vicious cycle, Gautam. I think both you and I know it. Politicians, businessmen and cricket is a very vicious cycle. On the other hand, if you can take these funds and, you know, divert them in a direction where there are attempts to improve infrastructures of grounds and pitches all over the nation, we've spoken about this in the past, and you probably take initiatives to, you know, have more young cricketers being sponsored on tours to England or Australia. And most importantly, like Ramachandra Guha recently said in one of his articles, getting former Indian cricketers involved in the whole process. Until you do this, I do not see the winds of change blowing in India's direction right now. For one, the great middle order that we've always boasted of is an old one right now, and none of the young players look convincing enough to take over their reins. Or let me be fair to them, or rather, you know, we haven't seen enough of those prospects to put our beliefs on them. You obviously cannot stop them from playing the IPL. You know, the solution looks very easy on paper. Identify those who can juggle between all three formats and ensure that their fitness levels are right. And I don't care how it's being done, as long as it is done. I think that is my only view with respect to how Indian cricket can move forward.
I mean, that's an interesting point that you brought up there, Chandra. I think we'll probably need a separate discussion just to see how the administration works and how the Indian setup is and how things work. And, you know, not just say from how an organization is run, but how things run in here in India. We'll probably get to that. Rajat, I know, I think the bigger concern here for India would be the batting. And it's been India's strength over the last 3 years. I know Zahir Khan has run up and done a great job for India in winning matches, but the batting has always put its hand up, and you always saw that the Indian batting team has come to the party when it was required. The biggest concern here I see, you know, the lack of big hundreds. You see that being the case with England now. I think over the last 18 months they've had something like 6 double hundreds. I'm not even sure if I can recollect a double hundred for India within the last 12 months. So with that being the case, and you see that the aging superstars as a sign of, you know, their prowess being on the wane. Do you think the Indian seniors would last long, and you have to start looking for youngsters for the future for India?
First thing about the immediate future of India. Let's see the upcoming one-day series in England and the Australian tour later the year. I would say never write off the Indian team. There have been numerous cases in the past where Indian team has performed miserably to the point that they were not even being good enough to face a Bangladesh or Zimbabwe. And in the next series, we know somehow they gather up all the inspiration and become world beaters again. Even in this World Cup, we were very ordinary in the group stages, and suddenly we became world beaters once the knockout time came. There are numerous other examples. The horrible New Zealand series of 2002, and suddenly the great run in 2003. The miserable 99 tour of Australia, and then our great run in 2001. So I would say we should not be that pessimistic. Losing three tests in a row is definitely a sign of worry, but our team is known to bounce back in a spectacular way. So I would hold off till the ODI series to see how it pans out. If India manages to perform well in the ODIs against a relatively weaker English side in the ODIs, we can probably gather up some confidence and inspiration to go all the way and compete against Australia. So regarding the the long-term future of India, yes, it's a concern with our aging batting stars, as well as our lack of depth in the bowling resources. So I would say we genuinely lack one great spinner in our team right now. So if we can manage up to groom Amit Mishra or Piyush Chawla, I don't know which spinner, but we do need one great spinner in our side. It is the spinners which have given us confidence to dominate the teams, to dominate the opponents, especially at home. And if a spinner comes along somehow, we'll probably be good.
I mean, it's a fair enough point that you make, Rajat. I know that it might be an overreaction that there's been hue and cry all over with India being blanked 3-0, and it's probably got more to do with the manner of the defeats, and it's gotten bigger as the series is prolonged, and there doesn't seem to be a semblance of fight. But looking at the immediate future, of India, Srivatsa, do you think that this is a one-off? Because I can't remember India being this bad, at least anywhere in the 2000s. I know Rajat mentioned the 2002 series in New Zealand. Both test matches finished in something like 2 days or 2.5 days, and it was not like New Zealand won it hands down. It was just a question of one more wicket, and India might have won the series 2-0. The last time I could remember India being humiliated was back in Australia in 1999 and 2000. Given all the scenarios in terms of looking at the future of the Indian cricket with the aging batting superstars and the lack of the quality batsmen coming through who are showing the stomach to fight against this kind of bowling. Do you think it's a case of one series that has gone really bad for India and you've got to give them a fair chance of, redeeming themselves in the next series? Or do you take this as a sign of lack of preparation for India's future once these three greats go away and say also Zahir Khan is out of the series? How do you see the immediate future panning out for Indian cricket?
Yeah, I would say that I would agree with you, but I would say that it's a bit of both. Like we lost Zahir in the on the first session of the first day, and it was a major blow. I would say it was a body blow, and we never recovered from that. Once we play with three bowlers, then we are always playing catch-up cricket. But also, this is also a sign that we have not prepared well for this major series, and we should have planned it better. And I agree with Chandra when he says that IPL is one of the major reasons that why we are not able to prioritize our cricket. But IPL will stay, and even though we want it to go away, it won't go away, and top players will continue to be taking part in the IPL. But we can, what we should do, and what we have to learn from England is how we should plan our resources, and how sh we should ensure that we give priority to all three forms of the game. And I don't see Zahir Khan playing much test cricket after this, because he at this point of time he needs another 16 weeks to get himself fit, and I'm not sure whether he'll be able to tour Australia also. And if in fact he tours Australia, and if he breaks up like he did in 2003 on the opening day at Brisbane, then India will be under tremendous pressure. Coming to the batting, what we needed was our batting to fire, and our batting has fired in recent times. But this series has turned out to be a disaster because Tendulkar was not ready and not prepared for this series. And as we saw in the first two tests, the ones who played in West Indies, Dravid and Lakshman, were the ones who shone. And we don't have enough replacements for the seniors, but we have to start bleeding youngsters soon, and the right opportunity would be the next series against West Indies, where we can ask one of the three, Dravid, Tendulkar or Lakshman, to sit out of the series, and we can try and give an extended run to either Kohli, Rohit Sharma or Pujara. And apart from that, we need to groom our fast bowlers. Like as we saw in the recent Emerging Trophy in Australia, Varun Aaron has really bowled well and has taken 10 wickets. We need to prioritize our planning in such a way that we plan teams. Like I would go ahead and say that we should play separate teams for tests, ODIs, and T20s. Like we should not ask a test bowler like Srishant or Nishant to play excessive ODI cricket, where they get mentally jaded, and coupled with the fact that they play IPL and Champions League, don't get tired. We should wrap them in cotton wool, and select bowlers based on the, like I would say, Srishant, Ishant, and Zahir are our main test bowlers. We can play Munaf Patel, Praveen Kumar, and others in ODIs. We have a lot of other bowlers who can fill in up, like we can give Dinda or Varun Aaron a chance in ODIs. And depending on those results, we can blood them in test matches. And I don't see any outstanding batting talent or a bowling talent coming up in domestic cricket. Yeah, we have a Rahane, we have we had a Mukund, we blooded him in England, but unfortunately has not done. Apart from Rahane, I don't see another outstanding batting talent on the horizon. The same with the bowling. And seriously, we, as Rajas said, we need to groom a top quality off spinner or a leg spinner. And it is the right time to give Ashwin a go in test matches, because I don't see Harbhajan Singh coming back to form. He needs an extended break and he needs to sort out his bowling, because his form has been abysmal over the last 2 years. So the immediate future for India would be like they will continue to be in the top four, and they will be very, very good at home, but on away tours they would continue to struggle with the aging superstars. And when it comes to the retirement of the seniors, I think I would give them the chance to bow out on their own terms and conditions. And but I'll at the same time, I would try to blood in the youngsters so that we don't suffer the same fate that Australia suffered when all those great seniors retired after the 2000 Ashes.
Right, I think there are more questions to answer here, and probably you know, we'll probably get together on another day wherein we can actually discuss some of the superstars that are probably emerging out of India, and probably how we have to pan it together on our next show. Right then, on that note, we've come to the end of this show, and before we say goodbye to our guests, let me just go around the table and just ask for a small prediction for the fourth test at the Oval. Chandra?
I think it's going to be a draw. England take the series 3-0. But if you ask me what I would like to see, I think the Indians need fresh faces. People who have not felt the strain of the series. So give guys like Kohli a run, get RP in, allow Saha to keep wickets, Mukund another run. You need energy in this team, and these guys do not have harsh memories from the field. So they can be the formula for a morale boost. But knowing the Oval wicket, I'm going for a draw.
Rajat?
This England team is not like Mahendra Singh teams in India, who were just happy to win the series 1-0 and settle for a draw on the fifth day of the final test. They'll still come with all guns blazing. They'll be equally hungry to win and complete the clean sweep 4-0. I predict an England win.
Srivats, are you?
Probably Chandra might not know about Oval, but the recent history suggests that Oval has always produced results, and England are going to prepare a green top, and they will make every effort to go for a clean sweep. And India already without Sehwag, because yesterday there were some rumors that Sehwag is not going to play in the final test, and he is still not comfortable with his shoulder. So with the grassy pitch and with probably Chris Tremblett coming back, and England would go all out to make it 4-0. But I would still say, if India play well and if India perform to their potential, they have a chance of drawing. But on current performance, I would say England are favourites to make it 4-0.
Right, interesting views there. I'll actually side with Chandra here, and would like to think that India has a fight at least for once in the series, and then, you know, with a little bit of rain perhaps, and also with a little bit of bottle in the batting finally, and some of these guys getting a little bit of big runs, and hopefully it's going to be a drawn test, and England take the series 3-0. Let's call it a wrap on the show. Thanks a lot for joining us. Thanks a lot for joining us, Chandra. Thanks a lot, Rajat. Thanks a lot, Srivatsa. For the listeners, if you want to post any questions to this panel for the next show, you can leave your comments in the comment section. We'll see you in the next show. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yep. Cheers, Gautam.
Thank you. Thank you, Gautam.
Thanks, Gautam.
Thanks a lot, everybody.